Welcome to the SpaceWesterns.com interview with Russell Davis. I'm the editor, Nathan Lilly. Russell Davis is the author of more than a dozen novels, 40 short stories, and a handful of poems. He's been the editor or co-editor of numerous novels and anthology titles in every fiction genre published today. His most recent anthology title is Lost Trails, and his next anthology is Ghost Towns of the American West. He's an active member of both the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America and the Western Writers of America, and has served both the Science Fiction and Western Writers communities in positions ranging from the Western Regional Director for CIFWA to acting as a judge for the Spur Awards and the Western Heritage Awards. In 2008, he was elected to the office of CIFWA President. You can discover even more about Russell Davis and his work at westernsensibility.blogspot.com. When did you begin writing?
I decided to be a writer when I was 12. It was principally because I really thought I could do it then as well as people were being published. It was a long time before I could, but I started writing when I was 12, mostly in science fiction and fantasy. And then as I began to gain more and more experience, I learned that quite often the dictates of the story would tell me what genre it really needed to be in, which sort of let me spin off into doing other genres, you know, Western or mystery or romance or whatever the story called for.
How did you get involved with the science fiction genre?
Well, it was my first love. You know, I can remember reading really, you know, not only the classics of the field, but people who were publishing as I grew up, you know, Ray Feist and David Eddings and Stephen Donaldson, and really falling in love with the idea, not so much of the hard SF, which has its place certainly, but more the fantastical elements of SF, where you were extrapolating to the point where it almost seemed magical. You know, I think it was Clark's law that, you know, any technology sufficiently advanced will be indistinguishable from magic. I liked that notion that somewhere, you know, in the far distant future, the things that would seem normal to them would seem magical to us.
How did you get involved with publishing?
Well, you know, I started off, you know, as a writer and wanted to write, and I want to say it was in the late 90s. I'd been editing and freelance editing throughout college, and I came up with the idea of doing my first anthology, which I did with Martin Greenberg, and I actually think the book's still in print. It was a dark fantasy anthology called Mardi Gras Madness that was published by Cumberland House. It sort of went on from there. I began publishing or editing anthologies. I became initially an editor full-time for a very short-lived publishing endeavor out in Maine called Foggy Windows Books. And then when the publisher decided that he didn't want to do that anymore, I went to Five Star and took over their romance and women's fiction line, as well as their science fiction and fantasy line. And, you know, it sort of just continued to build. It's in some ways, publishing's like the mafia. You don't ever really get to leave. You just do other jobs. And so it continued on to this day. And in fact, today I'm reading stories for a Western anthology that I'm doing.
What was your first introduction to space Westerns?
That's a really tough question. Because, you know, if I go back in my mind, I can remember watching Star Trek as a young boy, and Star Trek was a space western. So, you know, I mean, if I were to name a specific time or place, it would be really difficult. I can say that the notion of western, of space westerns, or a western in space, or that kind of thing, it's pretty much always been in my mind. I grew up in a family that were avid, my father and my grandfather were avid Western readers, and it was not at all uncommon for me to be given a brown paper bag, a grocery bag, which, you know, what they used in those days for groceries, full of paperback Westerns. And I knew from a very early in my writing career that they were highly compatible genres. It probably wasn't until I was much older and began to really understand cross-genre mixing that I was able to identify things like Star Trek as a space western. So it's pretty much always been in my mind that they worked well together.
How do you define science fiction?
I'm not sure that you can define science fiction at any moment except the moment of now. And by that I mean that all genres evolve and change. What was science fiction when the recently departed Arthur C. Clarke was, you know, writing in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, what was science fiction then, in many ways, is science reality now. And so to say, I'm going to define science fiction. Well, science fiction is you know, a fictional story that is founded upon elements of science, either real or extrapolated. But there's a hesitancy on my part to say this is what science fiction is because it's changing all the time. You know, I just did an anthology. I think it came out maybe a couple of years ago called Millennium 3001. But the idea was to ask the writers to extrapolate 1,000 years into the future. And the core notion of that idea came from, if we took what we have now and went and showed it to somebody 1,000 years ago, what would it look like to them? Well, it would look like magic. I mean, can you imagine 1,000 years ago what they would have made of cell phones or you know, this tiny little communicator that I could talk to anybody anywhere in the world that uses satellites? You know, that's pretty wild stuff. And I wanted to explore the notion of what would it be like 1,000 years from now. You know, is that science fiction? Well, yes, it is, but it's highly extrapolated because it certainly seems magical to us.
How do you define Western?
Well, there's really two ways, and I'm going to say the same thing about Westerns that I said about science fiction, which is that it's a genre that is constantly evolving, constantly changing. I just finished judging for the Wrangler Awards and the Spur Awards fairly recently, and a couple of Elmer Kelton books were entered for the Wranglers more by accident. They were actually hardcover reprints of some of his older books from the 60s, late 60s. And they were, you know, they were just as good and just as entertaining today. It's tempting to say that, you know, a Western is you know, well, it occurs, you know, anywhere west of the Mississippi River from the time of exploration to about, you know, maybe 1910 or so. But that's incredibly limiting because Brokeback Mountain was a Western. Now, it's not a Western that John Wayne would have ever starred in, but it's a Western. And so a Western to me actually goes more to some degree, the tropes of the genre, some of the archetypal themes and characters. And in no small degree, it goes to the notion of landscape, the landscape of the people and the landscape of the places. There are South American Westerns, there are Australian Westerns, you know, in the movies, you know, a number of years ago, there was The Man from Snowy River, you know, which is a Western. And so I think what we really need to look towards is not, you know, a specific time or a specific place as much as we need to say, is this meeting the sentiment of the Western? Does this meet the tropes? Do we see the landscape, places, and people that is similar to the archetypes of the Western?
Given all that, how do you define space Western?
Well, it's what happens when those two things are combined. And I'm going to use a really somewhat contemporary example and talk about the movie and television series Serenity and Firefly. What you saw there was a really great mixing. Those two genres and the tropes that go with those genres. You saw the science fictional elements where people had left Earth and terraformed, you know, worlds in another galaxy, and they had spaceships and things like that. But yet the lead character, the captain of Firefly, the captain of Serenity rather, was essentially a cowboy. Yes, he'd been a soldier during a civil war, in fact. But you know, he carried a six shooter. So you really see where. Some of the archetypal figures of the Western, the gunslinger, the prostitute, some of those things were carried over into a science fiction setting. And so that's, you know, if I'm going to define a space Western, I'm going to say it's a story that combines elements of both successfully.
Okay. How has your interest in Westerns influenced your science fiction writing?
A great deal, actually. What made Westerns work 50 years ago really still makes them work today. The stories of one man fighting against the elements or one man fighting against injustice, you see them everywhere. You've seen him in almost every genre. So for me, you know, I'm incredibly interested, I'm going to say it again, in the landscape of people and the landscape of places. I really think that it's really quite important to have a certain sense, whether I'm writing science fiction or Western, but in science fiction, a sense of almost larger than life places and people that are easy to identify with. And I think Westerns do that very well.
You've been quoted as saying, "The Western isn't gone, it's changing and evolving." How do you think space Westerns fall into this?
The really amazing thing about space Westerns is, in some ways, if you go back to the early days of Star Trek, and even Star Wars was to some degree a space Western. You know, these are stories that work in those genres pretty much regardless of when they were made. You know, whereas I see that you know, I see the Western, you know, you quoted me, the Western isn't gone, it's changing and evolving. Well, it is, and some of that has to do with, you know, something I mentioned earlier, like Brokeback Mountain is a Western. And so people who are in what I would call a, sort of the older generation of Western writers and Western publishers and so on, they look back on the glory years of the Western and you know, they say, well, geez, you know, the Western is dead and the sky is falling. Well, it's really not. Westerns are being done all the time. They're just not being called Westerns. You know, they're being called something else, and that's the publishers and the marketplace saying, look, you know, if you call it a Western, we're going to have trouble selling it. If you call it a mystery or you call it a historical, then it's easier. Space Westerns are no different in that if you look at space Westerns that are being done today, there's a real sense of continuity between some of the earliest ones and what's being done today. There's a real interesting parallel between Star Trek and Firefly. They're somewhat similar. So I think the space Western, to some degree, hasn't changed as much because the tropes still work. They worked well when it started, and they work well now.
Okay. Time and time again, both the Western and science fiction genres have been declared dead or dying. What's your outlook on this?
I don't think it's true. I think that genres change and evolve. And I'm going to use a really cheesy and corny and completely unrelated to those genres example. It wasn't that many years ago, no one had ever heard of a genre called chick lit. There was no such thing. And then this book came out called Bridget Jones' Diary. And people went absolutely wild for this book. I don't think the publishers expected it. But all of a sudden, there was this huge call for books about women in their 20s going through bad relationships and bad jobs, and they had to call it something, so they called it chick lit, and the next thing you know, a whole new genre was born. Well, it wasn't like books like that weren't being published before that sort of surge, and it's certainly not like when people stop calling it chick lit that books like that won't continue to be published. People tend to panic when their world, as writers especially, I think we do this, They see that the thing that they were doing for X amount of time isn't selling as well or isn't working as well. And they say, well, my genre's dead. Well, it's not dead. They just haven't been paying attention to the marketplace. It's moved. It's shifted. It's evolved. Look at the rise of urban paranormals or paranormal romance. You know, look at what Laurel K. Hamilton has done for virtually changing the face of romance publishing and fantasy publishing. These things, you know, Westerns, science fiction, all of those, they don't die. They change addresses. They become something different than what they were, and it all circles back around. Right now, Westerns are enjoying something of a resurgence, in no small part due to some Western films having a certain amount of success. But another part of that is because there are certain elements of the mystery market that have run their course. Are mysteries dead? No. It just, the market's changed. And I think that it's wise as a writer or a publisher or an editor to not be so much interested in what we're calling the books as interested in how do they fit into the marketplace of today. And it really behooves writers, I think, because, look, if you run around, you're a writer and you have an audience, even if it's a small audience, and you scream, my genre is dead, the Western is dead, or the science fiction is dead, who hears that? Well, your readers hear it. Well, they go, well, geez, the guy who's writing it says it's dead. Maybe I should find something else to read. And who else hears it? Well, your editor hears it. And your editor goes, well, geez, is it really? And then they start asking around, you know, God, the guy who writes it says it's dead. You know, I went to my salespeople, and they said, well, it's not selling as well as it used to. I guess it must be dead. Agents hear it, and publishers hear it. And pretty soon what we've brought about isn't the death of the genre. We've just brought about the death of a number of careers. Being a writer in today's market means being flexible enough to understand the marketplace.
Ridley Scott recently said in an article in the Times Online that science fiction is as dead as Westerns. What's your response to that?
Ridley's cynical. Look, I have a lot of respect for the work of Ridley Scott. You know, in fact, I was just watching a thing on Blade Runner the other night. But the thing is that, you know, he's not just doing himself and the people who admire his films and things of that nature. He's not just doing those people a disservice. He's doing the entire genre a disservice by saying that, because it's patently untrue. He says science fiction is as dead as Westerns. Well, that's not true. Look at how much science fiction and or fantasy, which I tend to sort of broadly lump into a big category of speculative fiction, it is popular from Cormac McCarthy, who writes post-apocalyptic fiction and Western fiction, all these things, to the movies being made, to the books that are being published. It's not dead. It's simply different than what was being made 25 years ago. And God, I hope so, because the reality is, if you look at it, those genres, they're alive and well. More books are being published today this year than will have been published last year, than will have been published 5 years ago. More titles in more different genres than ever before. So, you know, take a look at one of his films, Gladiator. There were a number of Western tropes in that movie. Now, I wouldn't call it a Western in particular because of some of the themes that were explored there, but the reality is that there were Western pieces in that film, including the main character, who was something of a cowboy. I would say he's wrong.
On your blog, Westerns for Today, you wrote an article entitled How the West Was Lost and How We Can Find It Again that cites three key problems of Western genre publishing, focusing on the past of the genre, apathy, and resistance to change. And it covers 6 points that the Western Writers Association should follow to help the Western genre be more relevant to modern readers. How much of this do you think applies to science fiction as well?
That blog post is being reprinted in Roundup, the Western Writers of America magazine. Some of it applies, and some of it to some degree. I think as writers, we all tend a little bit to elaborate and celebrate the past. The focus on dead people doesn't really help us too much in any genre. Now, that's not to say that there's not a really good point in sharing the history of a genre with readers and being able to say, you know, look at the work of Arthur C. Clarke or Isaac Asimov or in science fiction, or, you know, Louis L'Amour in Westerns. It's very valid and it's very important. But the problem is, the dead people don't write new books too often. They're not a part of the marketplace of now. They're a part of the marketplace of then. And if we spend too much time focusing on those things, and I mean that not just as writing organizations, but also in terms of our colleges and our schools, we're not teaching kids, we're not teaching people about what is now, we're teaching people about what was. And if you spend a lot of time focusing on what was, it comes off kind of dead. And that's a really kind of spooky thing. You know, the apathy. Science fiction writers tend to be less apathetic, I think, than Western writers. If for no other reason, then they've always sort of led the way. And, you know, I think science fiction writers were probably some of the first people to have websites and blogs and that kind of thing. So in that sense, you know, I think maybe science fiction is better off. But it's not to say that apathy can't set in. And again, it kind of goes to the whole point of, you know, everybody saying this is dead or that's dead, and then pretty soon, you know, it's really tough to be excited about what you're doing if the message you're hearing as an aspiring writer or as a you know, a writer who's maybe struggling at some point in their career, if the message you're hearing is that what you're doing is no longer relevant, then it's really tough to be energetic about engaging people about it. And resistance to change, I think, you know, certainly science fiction is supposed to embrace change. And I think they do a pretty good job of it. But even there, people wouldn't say things like, you know, Ridley Scott wouldn't say science fiction is dead if they weren't willing to look at the kinds of science fiction that's being published now, the kinds of science fiction movies that are being done now. You know, I suspect that Ridley's notion had to do less with whether it's dead and more to do with originality. You know, that may be, well, what he was getting at. But that's simply being, in my mind, resistant to changes in the genre. I'm kind of scrolling through this article now because I wrote it a long time ago. you know, the points beneath it, you know, I honestly believe that writing organizations, whether it's the Western Writers of America or CIFWA or Science, which is, you know, Science Fiction Fantasy Writers of America, or MWA, the Mystery Writers of America, these are opportunities. These times are opportunities for those organizations to take the forefront in helping writers and publishers and editors and agents in those genres understand what's being done now. It's very difficult. Because writing is a past tense kind of business. I mean, look, if you write a script or you write a novel and you sell it, by the time it actually comes out, a certain amount of time has passed. And you've, of course, long since moved on to writing something else. So we tend to be somewhat backwards looking. And I think it's really important for all of these organizations to not only work together to identify cross-genre things and so on and so forth, but also, you know, to be able to communicate with readers, with editors and publishers about what's being done, you know, at a given moment. I talk about, in that article, the annual convention for WWA, and I think CIFWA, Science Fiction Fantasy Writers of America there, and their annual convention moves. This year, it's in Austin, Texas. And you know, what an opportunity. It's in Austin, Texas. What an opportunity that is for example, space westerns to be explored. But it won't be. And I tend to think that when you have a convention out of the way places, I think WWA's convention last year was in Springfield, Missouri. You know, it took me three connecting flights to get there. And I live in the middle of nowhere. I think you need to put it in places where you give the people that essentially control the purse strings in publishing and in movies, you need to put it in a place that's easy for them to get to, and then invite them to get there. I talked about the Spur Awards, and you know, obviously every genre writing organization has their own award. CIFWA is the Nebula, MWA is the Edgars, and so on. Some organizations do a better job than others, but the point is that those awards should represent to publishers the real cream of the crop. You know, there's more work to be done there. Read the West doesn't really apply. You know, I think, you know, the last point I think I made in that was about dealing with film studios and publishing houses to reinvigorate. I think that's something that all writing organizations can do and should be doing. You can't take this, and this somewhat goes to apathy, Nathan. Writers tend to just accept what is about a given thing. The publishers say that you know, science fiction's dead, so I guess I'm dead. I don't have a career anymore. You know, I'm going to pick up my computer, you know, I'm going to take my typewriter and go home. Well, the fact is that genre writing organizations need to be in contact with the players in their genre and say, you know, look, we know that this is a changing and evolving business, and we want to be right out there on the very front edge with you, having conversations about what our membership is doing, because despite the cries of something is dead or something's not working anymore, new things are working and new things are happening, and we have to have those conversations because that's how we can keep those genres invigorated and changing and growing. And keep people sort of with what's happening again in the now. God, that was a really long article. I didn't realize it was that long. I was looking at that going, wow.
What do you think the attraction is to space westerns?
Well, you know, I think there's two things about space westerns that really attract people. First and foremost, and there are we are a people that loves to explore. I don't think we're ever going to get tired of that. You know, if 1,000 years from now we've gone to other parts of our galaxy and so on, there's still going to be groups of people going, you know, I wonder what's over there in that star cluster. It's built into us, this desire to explore, God, I hate to say it, new frontiers. And that's true if you go back to the earliest days of man, through American history, we weren't content to just hang out on the East Coast. We had to know what was on the other side of the Appalachians. And we got on the other side and we went, oh, look at all this space. We've got to figure this out. That's going to be true no matter what. And so to some degree, I think space westerns sort of address that need within us to see new places, to explore new areas. I think that's a big part of the attraction. I think another part of it is that the western aspects of space western tend to appeal to the archetypes of people. We can identify with the cowboy or the gunslinger. We can identify with a clear black hat. It's always nice. One of the things that I've talked to a lot of people about, most westerns to some degree or another, it's really easy to know who the good guys and the bad guys are. And that's important, especially for young people. An awful lot of our world has sort of descended into, you know, morality plays where no one has a clear compass. And I think in space westerns, and in westerns in general, most of the time, it's really easy to know who the good guys and the bad guys are and why the good guys are good and why the bad guys are bad. And I think in space westerns, that's something that appeals to people. You know, and I'll go back to using the example of Firefly, because it's the one I've been studying recently. Even when the hero of the piece is essentially a thief, he's a smuggler, you know that he's doing that for a good reason. It's how he's making his... he has no choice. And he can't bring himself to just settle for working for the Alliance, which is so clearly vested in its own interest. So I think that, you know, a big part of the appeal to space westerns is we know why people are doing what they do, and we can identify with it very easily.
Can you tell me more about the Read the West program?
Read the West was an idea I came up with a little more than a year ago, and the core notion of it is pretty simple. I'm trying to build a coalition, writers and publishers and movie studios and actors, actresses, to band together and agree to a couple of things. Number one, that it is incredibly important to reach out to young people about the Western genre. Because if you're not reaching young people... Young people are drawn to the fantastic, sort of on their own. You don't really, there's not as much, I mean, whether it's a video game or a movie, there's a reason Harry Potter is so popular. there's a reason that Star Wars and Star Trek and all these things, they are, you know, and video games like World of Warcraft or Halo or all of those things, young people are drawn to the fantastic, but they're not so drawn to history. And so I think we need to reach out to them. And the purpose of this coalition is to begin a process by which we will ultimately be able to provide books and movies to schools with teaching guides so that teachers can teach Western literature and Western film and not have it be a huge drain on the school's coffers. And, you know, it's a slow process getting all the pieces in place, but the ultimate goal of the program is to reach out to young people grade school and in middle school and in high school to get them now so that by the time they're adults and they're part of the consumer market, they want to spend their money on that and they want to explore those genres and they want to be involved.
Can you let me in on any exclusive information, unknown insights, or trade secrets?
Well, there is a secret handshake, and it's different for every genre. I'm fortunate that I know all of them. I love telling people that. there is a decoder ring. People want to know that. This is actually something I think is pretty important, especially aspiring writers. They think there's a secret handshake or a decoder ring that they just they just know this one piece of insider information or whatever that suddenly the doors will open. They'll get the keys to the kingdom. They'll be making money like, you know, Stephen King or John Grisham or, you know, whatever. And the truth is, about writing especially, the only secret is one that's pretty well, write well. Write well. And there's a certain element of luck to it, a certain element of hitting the right person at the right time with the right project. But the reality is that most of the information that anybody needs to succeed is out there. There really aren't any secrets. Editors and movie producers and all of them, you know, they're really looking for the same thing. They're looking for good stories. And they have to make a judgment call. It's not, people think it's personal. It's really about the most impersonal business I can imagine. And here, you know, here's a great example of that. When an author gets a royalty statement, an author thinks, how many books did I sell? The publisher thinks, how many units were sold? And on royalty statements, it talks about units. It never talks about books. Well, the reason it's units is because that's what they do. They sell units. They sell widgets. It's just like a factory. Their accountants look at the numbers and they say, you know, when an editor says, I want to do this book, they say, well, how many units, how many blue widgets can we sell? And so it's not personal. There's no cabal of people getting together and saying, well, who are we going to let into the secret club this year? At least not that I know of. You know, write well, be involved in the genre, meet people, talk to people. Knowing people is incredibly helpful. And keep writing, because what they're looking for is the same thing that you know, readers are looking for. They're looking for a good story.
What else can we expect to see from you in the near future?
A lot. I have an anthology coming out next year, which is sort of an interesting mix called Ghost Towns of the American West. And I'm actually incredibly excited about that anthology, because it really does sort of mix some of the old ghost story elements of Western literature, along with just sort of the landscape of places. And we've got some great authors in that one. You know, everybody from Elmer Kelton to Margaret Cole to Steve Hawkinsmith have gotten involved in that. And I'm finishing up another anthology right now, a very traditional sort of theme called Law of the Gun, which are stories about gunfighters. And although we certainly stretched the rules there. And then I'm actually working on a space western project that I'm co-writing with Greg Sime, who's a new writer, called Red Eden, which is about the colonization of Mars by Native Americans, and them trying to hold the line of this land that they've transformed into their own again, against once more you know, sort of people coming from Earth to take their land once again. So I'm actually really excited about that, because we've got a whole lot of elements of Native American mythology and spirituality in the story, as well as being able to do some really interesting things about the landscape of places. You know, Mars looks quite a bit like the American Southwest. as well as some of the ideas where we're talking about colonizing a new world, people searching for a home, and once again faced with the idea of that home being taken from them. So I'm very excited about that book.